What the fuck is up, world? Biali, Blaltik Bak. We back in this bitch. Another podcast for that ass. Another grito. Sea dicho. Coming about. Are you ready for this, dog? 4 motherfucking months since my last episode, right? Look, man, I'm not gonna bore you with the details. If you're still listening to this bitch, you already know the deal. Ain't shit changed but the swisher. Life happens, okay? Good, bad, and everything in between. And because of that, I just have not podcasted in about 4 months. So shout out to each and every single one of you that's actually listening to this, because if you are, that means that you are still interested. And that perhaps even we're keeping an eye out for your boy, right? I know a few of you were. Got a few DMs, got a few messages and comments, something along the lines of, when is the next episode? And let it be known that I never don't not appreciate that shit. I appreciate it very deeply, okay? In fact, there was a little bit of an impetus to get back cracking on this podcast game. There was a point in this 4-month break when I seriously thought to myself, like, dog, are you never going to podcast ever again? Like, what is going on? Because it's been a while. You know what I mean? And while realistically never not podcasting again is never going to be within the realm of possibility for me, unless I've mentioned before, like, buried underground, dog. That's the last time till I spit my last breath. You know what I'm saying? Like, obviously, then I won't be able to. If you want to be all technical. But, in terms of as long as I'm still kicking, dog, low riding through Turtle Island, you know what I mean? I'm be dropping these podcasts, hopefully more consistently, but if not, you know, just know that I do appreciate those of you who listen and stick around till the very end, right? Now, before I continue, I do want to give a couple of quick shout outs to everybody, as I mentioned already a couple of times, but more importantly, more directly, I should state, I do want to give a couple of shout outs to, first and foremost, one of my former students that I encountered randomly that says that they listen to the podcast. So shout out to you. That always means the most. Again, I appreciate every listener I get, dog, but my homies, and then soon after, my students were some of the very first people that were listening to this bitch. So, you know, when I find out that the homies and, you know, the students even from pre-pandemic era, dog, are still listening, it really, you know, means a lot, right? So shout out Miss Miranda. And also shout out on the gram, if you haven't already, follow your boy. OG_IceNice13. Shout out to your opposite number on the gram, right? For checking in on your boy, asking when the next podcast was going to drop. I see you, Vato, and I appreciate it, dog. So shout out to you as well, right? So yeah, dog, I guess let's just get right back into it. It's the first podcast back. So I'm realistically just looking to get my feet wet up in this bitch, right? And I'm going to do so in a few ways, mostly by keeping it short and not taking up too much of your precious time, you know what I mean? But also just reflect a little bit, starting with a reflection. Like, I have actual material that I'm hoping to discuss. But before I get into that, just a quick little rundown reflection for those of you who are interested in why it is that I have not fucking podcasted in 4 months. And I guess the simplest answer is because your boy's been busy. It's, you know, feast or famine, and thankfully right now we're in feast. That's just how, you know, the college professorship game works. Busy with work, busy with life, you know, I'm blessed and thankful for that. You know what I'm saying? I'm not knocking it in any way, shape, or form. I'm thankful for everything that happens, and I'm thankful for all the responsibilities that I'm given, but those responsibilities do require a large time commitment on my behalf, and because of that, I haven't had much time to podcast. Now, of course, that is mostly just an excuse because we all got 24 hours in a day, 7 days a week. And realistically, if I really, really, really wanted to podcast, I probably could have, right? So it's not that I didn't want to podcast. It's that I've just been low riding, dog. Like I mentioned earlier, through Turtle Island. What does that mean? The bata physics, man. Just walking around life, trying to get a better sense and better understanding of who I am, what my place is, what our collective place is here on this slippery earth. And just try to put forth ideas that are, you know, uniquely my own, as opposed to those that I've been inculcated with, that I've been brainwashed with, that I've been told are mine, but I really don't resonate with. You know what I mean? So a lot of that is part of why I hadn't podcasted. And to be more specific with you, I've really, really, really been getting deeper into these ancestral studies, bro. And the more that I do so, the more that I'm realizing how difficult the decolonization, if you will, process truly is, for a variety of reasons. One of the things that was actually very liberating to me, but simultaneously perhaps detrimental to the podcast game, was realizing how our ancestors viewed humans and, you know, the role that we play here on Earth. The liberating part to me was that it just gave me further credence to this idea that nihilism, as defined and concluded in the Western Christian world, it's really, really only a problem for the people who live beholden to the standards of the Western Christian world. The lack of meaning, the lack of purpose, as I mentioned before, with the quote-unquote death of God, all that. That's all uniquely Christian, you know what I mean? Western world. And our ancestors didn't really, you know, they didn't really concern themselves with that, dog, because no human, for the most part, was born for no reason. People were born for specific purposes. They conscientiously tried to have people be born around, you know, certain times because it was the people that they needed in the community at that particular moment. You know what I'm saying? I know I've mentioned this before, but I'm just reiterating because it's going to set the foundation for what I'm going to talk about here shortly. And I'm sure there were exceptions. I'm not trying to essentialize. But, you know, for the most part, this is what I've gleaned from the ancestral studies. And it actually comes from the naming traditions and the naming customs. You know what I mean? How we even got upon this lecture, because I know me, myself, I was guilty of this. And I know a lot of people still are on the gram of just giving ourselves like random ass, you know, Nahuatl names. But the truth is, like, that's not how they named themselves. I'm not going to share how they named themselves, but I will say that calling yourself something like a Tlatoani is actually a very big responsibility. And most people probably, you know, not deserving of it. I'm just being completely 100 with you. You know what I'm saying? And I know me, myself, I was guilty of it. That's why I'm saying I wasn't deserving of the name that I initially gave myself when it came to the Nahuatl naming. You know what I mean? But now that I got my name and all that kind of shit, now, you know, and now I've started to, the naming is just a secondary part to the more important part, and that is the understanding of how, you know, when people are born, they are born with a specific purpose. And that's why when you give yourself a name, the name is actually very significant. You know what I mean? And so these names aren't to be taken lightly. And for me, the name that I was given, it wasn't a name that was given to me like, here's your responsibility now. It was just the name, like my actual birth name, right? And according to the Nahuatl customs and traditions. And somewhere along the lines of, you know, receiving this and learning the knowledge of how Nahuatl approached the birth of humans into this planet, onto this slippery earth, I, you know, was relieved from a lot of the burden that I had that came associated with struggling with the depression inherent, with the sickness of spirit, to be more specific, that came inherent with the, you know, being thrown into this Western Christian world without a life raft to hold on to, if you will. The life raft here being like a foundation, the foundation for meaning and purpose for why we are here. And I know me personally, as I mentioned at the very beginning of my episode of this, very beginning episodes of this podcast, I used to struggle heavily with that, the lack of meaning, the lack of purpose, as I'm sure many people who are perhaps listening to this have and perhaps continue to still do, and certainly around the world. I know the only reason Jordan Peterson is famous right now is because he is speaking to a loneliness that is the result of this very fucking sickness of spirit that comes with the nihilistic despair. You know what I mean? And the relief came to me when I realized that our ancestors, were not beholden to this framework. They knew why they were here. What was their purpose? They're here to uplift your community. How are you going to uplift your community? In the way that they, in accordance to the, you know, the forces, if you will, the energetic forces that are inherent with the day in which you were born. That's why I was saying earlier, like, they would conscientiously try to conceive people at a certain time frame so that they would be born under certain energies, and that those people would go on to become, you know, the people that the community needed at that particular moment, right? Now, this, of course, was kept from us, from those of us who have been unfortunately detribalized, because we're not raised in our ancestral traditions. We are raised in the Western Christian world. And because of that, that's why people like myself struggled with it. You know what I mean? But part of the decolonization process was an active, for me personally at least, it was a concerted effort to regain some of the ancestral knowledge, but for many reasons. And one of them being so that I could perhaps try to make sense of what it is that I'm doing here on this slippery earth, dog. You know what I mean? And I'm a little conflicted because part of me is like, I know now. I know what I'm supposed to do. I mentioned it before. You know what I mean? What, to whatever extent, whether one person is listening to this, and if it's me, that one person, that's fine. Or whether it's 100 million people, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how many people are listening to it. My purpose for being here is to spread this fucking hood philosophy shit as deeply informed by our ancestral ways. You know what I mean? With this express intentions of offering it for those who are interested as a remedy to what I consider to be a sick, diseased world that we're living in. You know what I mean? That is my explicit purpose with this hood philosophy shit. And it gets deeper. Go back and listen to some of the other episodes that I've talked about it and some of the future episodes that I'll do about it, right? But that's the basic gist. Like, I now know my purpose. And the reason why I feel conflicted is because part of me would have liked to have been told right from the get-go, like, yo, you know, insert indigenous name here, Ice motherfucking Nice, right? Here's your purpose. This is what you're going to do. Now, grow accordingly so that when you become firmly rooted, so that when you are of, you know, ready, you can carry this monumental task, right? I consider it monumental. I don't give a fuck what you think, right? It's not grandiose on my behalf. I look around the world. I step into my classes and I see the sickness of spirit and I think to myself, I know to myself, it just resonates within me that I can help, right? Part of me would have liked this to have been, you know, thrust upon me from childhood in my ancestral ways and said, this is what your job is going to be essentially, you know, act accordingly. But the other part of me relishes the struggle that it took for me to get here. You know what I mean? Which is, by the way, deeply ancestral in the Nahua tradition, embracing the struggle. You know what I'm saying? The struggle that it took to get to this conclusion. I'm not trying to front. I'm not trying to sound grandiose. In fact, it's perfectly in line what I'm about to say with our ancestral traditions, because it will tell us that knowledge is already within us, okay? It's in literally, everything is everything, dog. The knowledge is contained within every single person. All we have to do is polish our precious little stones and reveal it to ourselves. The reason why I say this is because I've, you know, before I really, really, really started to commit myself to these ancestral studies, a lot of the shit that I was saying has resonated there. Like, I'm learning now. This has been like a recurring theme for me, and it's a recurring theme for a lot of philosophers. We think we make this grandiose, this grand, rather, discoveries only to find out that someone had written about it like 100 years ago, 200 years ago, however long ago, right? And that was kind of me when I started this hood philosophy shit. I was like, damn, dog, like, this is different. You know what I'm saying? But as I've progressed along my ancestral studies, it's like, actually, no, it's not. There's nothing different about it. This is exactly what my ancestors were talking about for thousands of years, long before I was born, right? And I just happened, it's not a happenstance. It wasn't by chance, because like I mentioned, it was already within me, right? I just was starting to slowly reveal it on my own. And now I'm being guided in a more directed manner. It's, you know, the water is being flowed in a more direct manner that is helping me to polish my stone, you know, smoother along the process, right? So, yeah, dog, how this pertains to the whole not fucking philosophizing for the last 4 months, it's simple, not podcasting, rather, for the last 4 months is this is the shit that I've really, really been dwelling on, bro. It's like trying to, it's a struggle between realizing that the decolonization process, it's actually difficult. It's not easy. I'm trying my best to be as fucking faithful, not just to our ancestral ways, but to the ancestral ways of many other people as well. I'm trying not to be pan-indigenous. I'm trying not to essentialize. I'm trying not to be reductive. And more importantly, I'm trying to live in accordance to the fucking actual teachings that are being put forth for us. You know what I'm saying? And it's very demanding. We'll leave it at that, right? And that's why earlier I was saying, like, I'm not casting shade. I mean, it sounds like it, maybe a little bit, I guess. Certainly a little bit of shit talking, I suppose. When I say that you're calling yourself a Tlatoani, dog, but you don't really know what that shit entails, the enormous responsibility that being a Tlatoani entails. A Tlatoani is like a ruler, right? So you have these motherfuckers that run around calling themselves like kings. I'm the king of this, I'm the king of that. And there ain't no difference for the we was Aztecs crowd. You know what I mean? Like, don't fucking put the Tlatoani crown all of a sudden and they're the king and all that kind of shit. And it's like, bro, you have no idea the high esteem and regard and responsibility that these, you know, Tlatoani were beholden to. And if you did, you probably wouldn't want it, because that means that now you need to be of service to your community in a way that I don't know if you're prepared to do, right? And I'm speaking from experience, okay? At the end of the day, dog, like I try to be as forthcoming and honest as possible. And what I definitely try to do is be as with the least amount of pretense as possible, and let it be clearly known that although I'm talking about all this shit about growth, self-discovery, development, healing from past traumas, recovering from these past traumas so that we may live more fulfilled and authentic lives. I am very much enmeshed in that process myself. I am not removed from it in any way, shape, or form. I am not this fucking ascended master. I'm not a fucking wannabe guru. I'm not trying to fuck you or take your money, basically. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm just relaying my experiences as I low ride through Turtle Island, dog. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is what's happening. I'm going to reflect on it and share it with those who are willing to listen. You know what I'm saying? And because of that, like, I have my, you know, the ups and downs like everybody else does, dog. The oscillations, if you will, of the kawat, of the serpent. You know what I mean? The undulations, I should say, of the serpent. It's up and down, homie. You know what I'm saying? And that's where I've been in these last 4 months that I haven't podcasted. I'm not just going to jump on this bitch. And, you know, I could try, and I have tried in the past, to come on here and do an episode every week. And it's, you know, sometimes the episodes were good, sometimes they weren't. Whatever the case was, they were absolutely influenced with where I was currently in my trajectory in life at that moment. You know what I mean? And one thing that I have learned in that process is that I don't want to just come on here and give you a product that isn't completely polished, right? And in these last 4 months, I myself was not entirely polished because I was trying to come to terms with the difference, dog, the difference. The truth is, you know, Chicanos, Chicanas, peoples of, you know, and it's not just us, dog. I'm speaking Chicanos, Chicanas, because this is our ancestral knowledge that I'm sharing here. Mexican-Americans, but also people that are connected still to any other culture, that maybe their parents were immigrants to the United States of America. You know, Muslim-Americans, Asian-Americans, like, it's a similar struggle, dog. And the similar struggle is that in many ways, we occupy two worlds. We occupy two spaces. This is what Anzaldúa was talking about when she speaks of the borderlands. Like, we exist on literal borderlands. El Paso is a borderland, yes, but we also exist in the borderland of cultures. You know what I'm saying? And it's part of the reason why I say this decolonization process has been, it's pretty difficult, man. It's not just this hip, trendy hashtag that you throw out on social media and, you know, try to get clout for doing. If you're engaging with it, honestly, it's pretty fucking difficult. And for me, the difficulty was coming to terms with the fact that the Western world is a little bit easier than what I'm starting to discover this ancestral world really is. And perhaps there's a little bit of lament, but the lament is more like, you know, weakness on my end. And the lament here being is that it's easy, dog. The Western world, realistically, if you want to be average American Joe, that's pretty fucking easy, dog. No disrespect to the Jose's and Joe's out there. It's just a fucking saying, you know what I mean? But it's pretty simple to be an American Joe, the average Joe. You just go to work, 9 to 5, you know, collect the paychecks, you get the family with the two and a half kids, the two car garage, the picket fence, you know what I'm saying? You barbecue on the weekends, get drunk on the weekends, watch football on Sunday. That life is actually pretty easy, bro. It comes at an enormous, enormous expense, but it's pretty simple. It's pretty easy. And you could, for better or worse, live your entire life in that state of fallenness, if you will, as it is that I've mentioned with the previous lectures on, or rather episodes on Heidegger, and never reflect on it at all whatsoever and get from cradle to the grave with the least amount of resistance and probably won't even be judged for doing so. You'll probably actually be celebrated because that is what we value in this diseased Western fucking society, 2024 United States of America. You know what I'm saying? And it's comforting in the sense that once you start to engage with and once you start to embrace the responsibilities that our ancestral ways, you know, thrust upon us, for those of us who, you know, have been fortunate enough to either know or figure out what it is that we're supposed to be doing, it's, you know, it's comforting and it's tempting even to want to resort back to that way of life, dog. That's why it's just like this constant back and forth between the indigenization and the colonization. You know what I mean? Decolonization is the goal. Land back is the goal. Don't get me twisted, 100%. But like I said, I'm just trying to relate to you the process. And the process is I fight within myself constantly to fight against, if you will, the Western world that I was raised in because of how comforting and how tempting it is. So when I say that we exist in both worlds, that's what I'm talking about. one part of us is being pulled this way and the other part of us is being pulled that way. And in this particular way, it's actually a lot easier than being pulled in this particular way. So we want to be over here, but because it's easy, but realistically, we know that we should be over here because even though it is difficult and it's going to be demanding of us, it will probably be more rewarding, right? So that's kind of where I've been in these last 4 months. I go through, you know, and again, the undulations, I'm not alone. I know you probably go through them too of life where, you know, one day you're like super motivated to do one thing and the next day you're just like, fuck man, can I just lay in bed all day and not do anything? And the answer is no, dog. If we're following the ancestral traditions, the answer is no. You have to be a friend to life. You have to embody the fucking life force, the Tonatiuh, the sun. You have to be like the sun. You have to be consistent. You have to be punctual. You have to be illuminated. You know what I mean? But not illuminating in a way that's going to, you know, burn out, but in a way that's going to rather light the way and help light others' torches so that they can continue along their way as well, right? The uplifting of the community. And there is no break from that, dog. That is an everyday thing. And it can potentially be exhausting, but that's where the fucking resolve comes into play. You have to have the resolve, and the resolve is difficult to have when you know that just over here on this side of the border, literally, but I can't even say Mexico-American border because Mexico for the most part, except for the indigenous part, it's also the Western Christian world. You know what I'm saying? So the border that I'm speaking to here is this imaginary metaphorical border between indigenous ancestral culture and Western Christian culture, right? It's difficult to maintain that resolve when you know that just on the other side of this border over here, the Western Christian world, it's a little bit easier, if you will, right? Because you don't have to do any of that. You don't have to do any of that. You can just accept what the Western Christian world tells us, society tells us is a good life, and be done with it. You know what I mean? You don't have to be like the sun. You don't have to be punctual. You don't have to be illuminative. You don't have to be anything. You can just lay there and wait to die if you wanted to. You can work 9 to 5, be buried alive. You know what I'm saying? And I'm not saying that it's impossible to find meaning and purpose in the Western Christian culture. Maybe there is. I'm saying that me personally, I didn't find it. And there was a reason why I started looking elsewhere. And now that I found it, part of me is like, oh, fuck, because there's no going back. You know what I mean? There's no going back, dog. This is the whole metaphor of the allegory of the cave. The moment you break away from the people that you know and love, it gets more and more difficult to escape the cave. Why? Because you know with every step you take, the further and more distant you'll grow from these people who you know and who you love and who you grew up with. You know what I'm saying? And the question is, are you sure this is what you actually want? Because you're giving up a lot. You're going to gain a lot in return, but you're giving up a lot as well, right? So that's what I'm saying. Like, that's where I've been these last 4 months within this realm, this gray area of comfortability where it's like, oh, fuck, dog, is this really something that I want to do? Is this indigenization shit something I'm really ready to accept? And the answer is yes, dog, it is, right? It might take me a while. It might take me a while to gain the resolve necessary, but eventually the answer remains the same. I would love to be the Tonatiuh. I would not the actual sun itself. I would like to embody the Tonatiuh, right? So yeah, dog, just recently, actually, we just celebrated the celebration of Xipetotec, which is a very special veintena in, you know, the culture, if you will. And Xipetotec itself is a very interesting story, I guess you could say, because from a colonized perspective, it's probably one of the most notorious, I guess, in a way that it was used by the Spaniards, wrongly, of course, to demonize our ancestors. Specifically in this particular case, so Xipetotec was allegedly a god, but you know, there ain't no gods, dog. But it's a celebration that's dedicated to the shedding of the skin, more specifically, okay? And so the reason why it's so notorious, infamous, and you know, Nahua history according to the Spaniards is because what they said is that the peoples that would celebrate it, you know, they would actually fucking flay people, not like fillet a fish, right? Flay, you know, take their skin off and shit. And that they would wear their skin as part of the ceremony, which is just it's not entirely true, but it's definitely not entirely correct, all right? So the reason why it's not entirely true is because it's actually like a ritual ceremony, dog, where it's, and I'm not going to talk too deeply about it because, you know, it's not my space to talk about it. But I will mention how the Xipetotec did help me get back into this podcast game after, you know, fucking 4 months out, dog. Like, it was about time to get back in, right? So basically, it's the shedding of the skin. So it's like heavily resonated with the coat, the snake, you know what I mean? the same way that snakes shed their skin every single year. It's, you know, this is the Nahua practice, dog. We're the embodiment of the natural world. So what happens in the natural world is reproduced in us in similar seasons. You know what I'm saying? So just like a snake sheds its skin, so too do we. And it offers us the Xipetotec celebration, the opportunity to do just that, right? So how it fucking, you know, relates to the story that I was telling you briefly about the Spaniards is that they would quite literally use it and say that, you know, that we, when we would celebrate it, that we would wear the skin of others that we killed. And it's just like, no, that's not what happened. You know what I mean? They're still, and you could find it. It's not hard to find, right? But they're still established ritual of what was done. And a lot of it was actually, you know, like paper, dog, paper, you know, that you would wear kind of like a snake, and that you would go through the elaborate ritual. And, you know, after it was said and done, you would burn the skin and offer it. And it was a long ceremony, right? I'm giving you the fucking nitty gritty, or the short and skinny, I should say. But the point being is that, you know, it was never regarded about wearing the skin of our enemies or wearing the skin of those that we killed in combat. And right now, I'm not going to say that there weren't particular, you know, individual instances where that may have occurred. But what I'm saying is that from a collective perspective, that's what was really happening. You know what I mean? So we still celebrate this ritual in many ways, well, not in many ways, in the way, you know what I'm saying? And yeah, so it was during this time, right, that I'm sure, I'm not alone, dog, in going through these cycles, right? Where it's sometimes you feel like the waters are flowing and sometimes you feel like the waters are frozen. Sometimes you feel good and sometimes you got the sickness of the spirit, right? And a lot of that I feel is in correlation with the cycles of the universe. And the Xipetotec definitely was one of them, bro. Like, I just felt the need to shed the person that I was in the year prior to give birth to the person that I'm trying to become. And of course, the only way you can do that is by actively engaging with what it is that, you know, let's say it's kind of like a New Year's resolution. I don't like to call it that because it's so reductive and westernized, but that's kind of, if I were to ally it to anything, what it would be, dog. But it's so much more than that, right? In fact, one of the things that, you know, the elders and the, you know, what they'll say about the traditions and looking towards the Western world and how they celebrate New Year's in the middle of the winter, that's one of the things they state is you wonder why your New Year's resolutions never work. You're, you know, stating them in the dead of winter, man. This is a time of rebirth. If you want to birth new things into reality, you got to do so during the time of rebirth, which is now, like the springtime area. You know what I'm saying? So the person that I'm trying to birth and trying to give birth to is someone that, you know, I'm not going to talk about it too deeply because it's still on some personal shit, but which this whole podcast is on that personal shit, obviously. But what I'm trying to state more specifically is that I don't want to get ahead of myself. You know what I'm saying? Because there's actually a lot of responsibility. There's actually a lot of responsibility with these Xipetotec, you know, commitments that you make, dog. And again, without getting too deeply into it, because A, as I mentioned before, I'm not entirely too qualified to be talking about it. There's more, you know, there's people that we should be listening to speak about this. I'm just relaying to you the information that they taught me, right? Which is fine because that's how knowledge works. You know what I mean? According to our ancestral ways, knowledge is not meant to be gatekept. It's not meant to be safeguarded. It's meant to be shared. I take the knowledge and I, you know, reinterpret it a different way and I share the knowledge and the process continues because the knowledge gaining process is dynamic according to our ancestors, right? So it's not like I'm giving away secrets and shit that I'm not supposed to be doing, but what I'm trying to state is that I'm doing it a disservice because there are people that can explain this to you in a way that makes me, you know, leaves me in awe. And I would like for you to feel the same way, right? I'm just introducing it to you so that you, if you are interested, can go along your way in finding it, right? But as you get, you know, deeper into these ancestral studies, you start to learn that there's things within us, all of us, the collective whole, right? Because we were all one. That, you know, existed long before we were born, existed long before we were ever a thing. And yet this thing knows us more than it knows us intimately. It knows us more than anything else on this planet. This goes back to more of that Spaniards way of demonizing that which they didn't understand from our ancestral ways. It's the Tezcatlipoca, dog. And the Tezcatlipoca is far too complex to break down to this one particular instance. But I will state that it's that which giveth and that which taketh, right? That's one of the interpretations. And when Spaniards saw this, where they put two and two together and they, you know, interpreted it through their Christianized lens, then what they stated was, well, if it's something that takes away and has the ability to do harm, then that must be a demonio. It must be a demon. It must be a devil, right? Nah, dog, it's not that. In this particular instance, the Tezcatlipoca within us is this thing that's, it's realistically neutral. You can apply it in a way that will give you, that will be of great benefit. hence why it's that which giveth, right? But it can also be applied in a way that doesn't, you're not doing it correctly, dog. And it can fucking take away, right? The Yowaltzin, homie. It's this thing that exists. It's just there, right? It's like our subconscious, I guess. It's the smoking mirror. The smoke, it's incomprehensible. It's invisible like the night and intangible like the wind. Yowalieqat, right? One interpretation of the Tezcatlipoca. But the point here being is that that shit follows us, dog. And, you know, I don't want to give the wrong impression, like it's good and bad. Again, I'll just leave it at that. I mean, I'm not going to just leave it at that, but I'll qualify it with that. And so when I was going through this Xipetotec, when I was learning about the Xipetotec and when I was preparing myself for the Xipetotec ritual, this Yowaltzin, it really scared me, dog. Like it terrified me, which is why I'm not like, hey, this is what I'm going to do. This is my quote unquote New Year's resolution. This is my Yowaltzin. I mean, I'm sorry. This is my, you know, my ceremony, what I'm offering to the shedding of the skin, right? Wish me luck, guys. Like, no, it's not like that at all, dog. In fact, it's a tremendous, tremendous responsibility. And when I state that this thing follows us, this Yowaltzin follows us, it's like creeping in the subconscious. Like when I learned it, when, you know, this is in me personally, when I learned this, the image that kept coming to mind was from Insidious, where that fucking little demon in the background pops up. But I don't like share. I just want to qualify that it's not evil in that particular way. Like, it's just scary for sure, right? Because, but not in like, I'm going to haunt you and possess your soul type way, like the way the Spaniards and the Christians interpreted it, right? It's more like, dog, you said you were going to do something and you're not doing it. You said you were going to shed your skin and you're not shedding your skin. This is an enormous responsibility. You've come here to leave fucking fruit behind, raise flowers to the sky, and you are not doing any of what it takes to manifest that. And that is an enormous weight to carry. It's an enormous burden to carry. It's, you know, if you want to frame it within the Western Christian lens, exactly what it is that David Goggins talks about when he's speaking about how when he gets to the very end, he doesn't want to be the person trying to explain himself to God about why he didn't do what it was that he was supposed to do. You know what I mean? And that's basically the same principle that's happening here with this Xipetotec. It's like, dog, you say you're going to do something, but you're not doing it, right? And it's like, okay, I'm going to take then. You want to behave this way? I'm going to take. Conversely, of course, you can do what you have to do. And it gives. What does it give? It gives the flowers that, you know, you've cultivated. It's spring. You're planting flowers, dog. And if you engage in all the actions that you're supposed to be doing in order to, you know, see these flowers into fruition, then you will get rewarded by the fruit of the flower, most importantly, right? So, yeah, when I say like I don't want to share that, that's why, because I want to make sure that I have the resolve to actually, you know, see these flowers through to, you know, fruition. I mean, I guess a little bit to that end, I've already kind of I'm gonna tell you anyways, dog. I'll tell you one of them. I want to be more productive. I want to expand this, not only just give more consistent podcasts, like that's a given, dog, but I want to expand this. I want to be able to do this in different ways that, you know, reaches beyond mediums. And I did also want to talk, dog, a little bit of some ideas that I've just been, you know, it's been 4 months, homie. Like, there's a lot of life happening in those 4 months. You know what I'm saying? And I did want to kind of just briefly mention some of the things that I've been fucking, you know, just mulling over. Because again, the way this, not, and I just learned this recently, so why I keep stating this is because not only am I just happy that I learned it, but because now I'm trying to apply it even more so. It actually, learning this and you know, in conjunction with the folks that reached out and were like, yo, where's the podcast? You know what I'm saying? As well as the Xipetotec actually really did help in coming back to this podcast. You know what I'm saying? But what I just learned is that the way our ancestors viewed knowledge, like I had something of an idea, but just learning more about how they viewed knowledge was very, it really meant a lot. You know what I mean? So it was like, fuck, dude, you have a responsibility, and that responsibility is to share this knowledge, because the people who are listening to this bitch, they're going to take that knowledge and they're going to formulate the knowledge and they're going to spread that knowledge in a way that it's not going to fucking bastardize it or change it in any way, but it's only going to help strengthen it and sharpen it and make it perhaps better. You know what I'm saying? The point of the knowledge is to show the way, to illuminate, to open the doors, not to be the door. You know what I mean? So I share this with you in the sense that I'm trying to sharpen these ideas, I guess. You know what I mean? Basically. What good is the knowledge that I'm teaching, for instance, if it's fucking being hidden behind the paywall of academia? That was one of the biggest principles of hood philosophy, that this knowledge is being gatekept by people who you know, have a conscientious effort or desire rather to keep that knowledge hidden. And the whole point of Hood philosophy was to be a fucking organic intellectual, if you will, to use the Gromskian language. And by the organic intellectual, I mean the person who, you know, exists outside of academia and helps share the knowledge with those who aren't in it as well. The working class fools like you and I, you know what I mean? So I'm looking forward to doing that, right? And I wanted to kind of do a little bit of that right now. It was actually the intended purpose for those of you who have listened to this podcast from the very beginning, but it's just, it's kind of meandered. I'm still trying to fucking polish this podcast. 110 episodes in, and I'm still trying to polish it, right? And I did want to kind of just briefly mention some of the things that I've been fucking, you know, just mulling over. Because again, the way this, not, and I just learned this recently, so why I keep stating this is because not only am I just happy that I learned it, but because now I'm trying to apply it even more so. It actually, learning this and you know, in conjunction with the folks that reached out and were like, yo, where's the podcast? You know what I'm saying? As well as the Shipetotec actually really did help in coming back to this podcast. You know what I'm saying? But what I just learned is that the way knowledge, the way our ancestors viewed knowledge, like I had something of an idea, but just learning more about how they viewed knowledge was very, it really meant a lot. You know what I mean? So it was like, fuck, dude, you have a responsibility, and that responsibility is to share this knowledge, because the people who are listening to this bitch, they're going to take that knowledge and they're going to formulate the knowledge and they're going to spread that knowledge in a way that it's not going to fucking bastardize it or change it in any way, but it's only going to help strengthen it and sharpen it and make it perhaps better. You know what I'm saying? The point of the knowledge is to show the way, to illuminate, to open the doors, not to be the door. You know what I mean? So I share this with you in the sense that I'm trying to sharpen these ideas, I guess. You know what I mean? Basically. And some of the ideas, like, all right, I guess, for instance, I'll start with the Morrissey one, dog. I keep meaning, for those of you who follow on the gram, you'll know that I made a video about a month or something like that ago, talking about the Morrissey and the phenomenon of the Morrissey effect. And it's just like, I did mean to make a follow-up to it, and I'm going to eventually, but really quickly, for those of you that don't follow on the gram, the basic idea was in response to this apparent phenomenon that there is of people being stunned by the fact that Chicanos, foos particularly, fuck with Morrissey, The Cure, and just post-punk in general, which sincerely, for those of you that watched the video, but those of you who haven't, like I mentioned in the video, was a shock to me, because I just kind of always assumed that, well, it's popular culture. Of course we know this shit, you know what I mean? But as you examine it a little bit further, it's like, well, they don't really know what we mean for a variety of reasons. And one of the reasons why I actually haven't made the follow-up video is because I was going to go in, dog, I really was, on the whole colonized shit. And I got a DM on the gram from a gentleman who is of, you know, European descent. Really cool dude. You know what I mean? Like, I've never met him in person, but we've conversed back and forth a little bit on the gram. And he really helped situate a lot of my initial frustration with this. Because the initial frustration was like, bro, like, how can you be, like, you're just blatant erasure and you're trying to mask it under this fucking lovable guise of, oh my God, look at these cute little brown people. They like the Smiths. Like, what? No, dog, we've been here this whole fucking time. What are you talking about? You know what I mean? And I was really going to go in on the, you know, colonized perspective of that, the racist perspective of it, dog. Like, it's not cute. It is what it is. You know what I mean? But having talked to this one dude, it really changed my view on that perspective in itself, right? In a way that it's like, okay, you can't just immediately throw out that R word, racism, to people just willy-nilly. You can't do it so indiscriminately, because it's easy to let that be the default reflexive action. But perhaps it's more important to be a little bit more understanding. And in this case, the understanding comes in recognizing that not everyone had the ability to grow up next to Chicano people, dog. Not everyone had the ability to grow up to Mexicans, Mexican-Americans, indigenous folks, etc., right? And because of that, they didn't have the ability to make friends in our community. And moreover, they don't know anything about our community except from, like, what I mentioned in the video that I did make, fucking Fools Gone Wild, dog. So when you look at Fools Gone Wild, if you've never had any, you know, association with Chicano folks, that's going to be like, well, I thought you were all like this sick ass fools. You know what I mean? It's like, nah, dog, there's a lot of, there's a wide range of Chicano people, of Mexican-American people, of Mexican people, of indigenous people, et cetera. You know what I mean? Like, they come in all flavors, homie. They come in all colors, just like the corn. You know what I'm saying? And you can't hate on people because they don't know that, I guess, right? So that's part of the reason why I haven't made the backdrop video, dog. And I'll just tell you right now really quickly, the backdrop video is going to be just talking about how we are a people that have been born of a split. We're a people that are, you know, we're born from a violent, you know, cataclysmic event in global history. We are born of, you know, violence, essentially. And that ensuing violence has caused a lot of us a deep anguish and a deep pain that we carry within us at a genetic level. We carry with us this genetic memory of what we were and how we came to be. You know what I mean? And that is, of course, the violent insertion of the Spanish culture, for lack of a better term, into our indigenous ancestral ways. You know what I'm saying? And because of that, and this is coming from the book Labyrinth of Solitude by Octavio Paz, because of that, a lot of, you know, Mexican people in general are deeply morose, deeply somber, very melancholy, right, with a wicked black sense of humor. So the question of why do, you know, Mexicans fuck with Morrissey is like, dog, what did I just explain that doesn't resonate and sound exactly like Morrissey is? You know what I mean? Like, it's, this is why we fuck with Morrissey, not because Morrissey, like in the initial video that I made, gave us the ability to cry. It's not true. And in the follow-up video, I'm going to explain how, because, dog, when you grow up the way we did, right? And I'm assuming if you didn't, I'm just going to let you know, like, my grandparents, they're from Mexico, dog. And, you know, they still hang on to their old ways in a lot of different ways, dog. So when you growing up at 7 o'clock in the morning to the smell of Fabuloso and this deeply, deeply somber, yet simultaneously life-affirming music about people who are lamenting their existence on this slippery earth and why, like, what everything is happening and the heartbreak and the mistrials and the, you know, the alcohol and drug abuse and how they're just, you know, the missing and lamenting of dead loved ones. When you grow up with that just as a part of normal everyday life, it's, you know, shit like the Smiths, it doesn't really have that emo emotional appeal as opposed to our, you know, this Mexican cultural ways, dog. And that's not to dismiss the Smiths. Interesting way of putting that, right? Because I fuck with the Smiths, dog. I love the Smiths. I love Morrissey specifically. You know what I'm saying? So much as it is to say, don't dismiss what our own culture adds to the fucking mix. You know what I'm saying? And that's why I added that one dude who's part of the fucking reptilian overlord program over at the World Economic Forum. Just because this dude's Mexican, dog, doesn't mean he speaks for us. Like, if he doesn't know this, he doesn't have a connection to that himself. He's just another westernized American. You know what I'm saying? Which, again, I can't be mad at that because the violent stripping away of our ancestral past. But the point being is that you can't dismiss that, dog. You can't erase that. And, you know, you can't just try to lump us in, rather, into this, you know, Western liberal world for the sake of trying to be as, you know, inclusive, I guess. Fuck, I don't know what they're trying to do, man, as possible. Like, nah, dog, that's not how it works, right? Another issue that I really fucked with heavily, perhaps if you didn't, you know, again, follow on the gram, is the one about the Cholo culture in downtown El Paso, dog. And one of the reasons why I didn't mention this in my initial post, I plan on making a video out about it, right? But one of the things that I didn't mention in that post is the actual history of downtown, dog, recent history, and why those places are so upsetting. And I think one of the reasons that a lot of people haven't really started to, really haven't paid much attention to, was the blatant racism. Like, this is real racism, dog, right? That led to the development of downtown El Paso, dog. There was this one corporation who actively made a campaign issue as an advertising agency, and they went out of their way to explain the common downtown El Paso, and it was like the most stereotypical, you know, shit imaginable, dog. And when you take that into account with what is actually happening right now in downtown El Paso, which is, of course, the gentrification, it really starts to make a little bit more sense. And again, I plan on making a deeper video of this, again, more of the chipetotec. So I guess I keep fucking telling you, I keep saying I'm not going to do it, but then I keep doing it anyways, right? Trying to be mindful of this. Like, we got to make this shit happen because I do not want the Yautzin following me behind, just haunting me, letting me know, like, hey, bitch, you said you were going to do this and you ain't yet done it. So what's up, right? Anyways, dog, another part of that really fucked with me that I, you know, really, really want to emphasize is the glorification of the Cholo culture, dog. Like, I love Cholo culture. It's beautiful. It's amazing. It's my shit, dog. It's what I grew up in. You know what I mean? But as I've mentioned before, I've always had a very contentious relationship with it. And as I've progressed through life, as I've continued to, you know, stay low riding through Turtle Island, it makes a little bit more sense, dog. Like, it's just starting to reveal itself more and more. And a big reason as to why is because, bro, as easy as it is to try to glorify the Cholo culture, and understandably, because of how aesthetically pleasing, it's very aesthetically pleasing, right? In doing so, we're doing a disservice to a lot of the actual and perhaps even imagined harm that did occur during this Cholo culture era, dog. And it's not even, I wouldn't even say imagined, dog. It is real harm, like actual harm. And at this point, I'm not even talking about the harm that was caused to other peoples. Like, yeah, Cholos were, you know, they don't fuck around, dog. Even the Bloods and the Crips know not to fuck with the Essays, right? What's that? Damn, I forget that dude's name. No disrespect to that homie, but he's one of my favorite Chicano rappers right now. King Lil G, there you go, right? Because, yeah, dog, like, I'm not trying to dismiss the real harm that Cholos did to people. But what I'm saying is that that's obvious. Like, that's just a given. You know what I'm saying? The harm that often doesn't get spoken about, dog, is the part that's really helping me understand why, for the longest time, I didn't fuck with Cholo culture, dog. And the reason why is because it's deeply, deeply fatalistic, bro. It's a deeply nihilistic, actual real Cholo culture, dog. You know, 1990s Cholo culture and a little bit of what exists still to this day, no question, I'm sure, right? But 1980s, early 1990s Cholo culture, dog, was deeply nihilistic. And inevitably, I'll explain how the nihilism, ultimately what it does is, you know, stop us from collectively organizing and coming together and realizing that, dog, we're not just these little wetback beaners that we've been reduced to in this Western Christian world. We actually have a very strong ancestral legacy that, if applied properly, can change the world for the absolute better, dog. And I mean that with every fiber of my existence. And what happens when you get caught up in the Cholo culture shit is that the ability to do that is jeopardized, because instead of, you know, having our peoples being raised to fucking value this outlook that our ancestors left behind for us to build a better world from, what we do is we get caught up in this Cholo culture that is deeply fatalistic and does nothing more than serve the interests of the Western Christian capitalist order, dog. Like, they want us in jail. They want us rotting away to drugs and alcohol. They don't want us collectivized and organized. They don't want us reclaiming our ancestral identity. That's deeply, deeply dangerous to this nation, this settler colonial nation, this whole Western society, dog. You know, this, I mean, I don't know how many times I gotta state it, dog. This diseased Western world, like, they want that shit the way that it is. You know what I'm saying? And if we start reclaiming a little bit of our ancestral ways, if we start sharing this ancestral knowledge and seeing what our ancestors really were like, dog, and the shit that they valued, all of that becomes deeply, deeply endangered. Assuming the people can uphold it, because I'm telling you myself, dog, like, I struggle with it. I struggle with it. It's a lot of responsibility. You know what I mean? But I know that I strive every day to try to get better, dog, and I know I'm not alone and that others want the same. And when you start celebrating this Cholo culture, it's actually a little bit counterintuitive, dog, like actual real Cholo culture. I guess I'm saying is, like, know what you're celebrating, bro, because the aesthetics are dope, no question about it. But what you're celebrating is some shit that is very problematic, dog, right? When you have people, like, there's mad interviews, you can find them on YouTube, on social media, of Cholos and Cholas from the 90s and the 80s, right? And there's one that always sticks out into my head. I forget the name of the Cholia, but one of the things that she says is she's being interviewed about, like, a drive-by, and the interviewer asks her, well, what if you kill someone, or what if they kill you? And then she responds, I don't care if I live or I die. Like, it's just, it is what it is, basically. You know what I mean? And honestly, dog, like, that is painful to hear. It is like, damn, bro, that fucking hurts on a visceral level. And it really does get to the core, I believe, of the fucking colonization, dog. It's like that we've been reduced to nothing more than brown bodies out here killing each other on the streets or filling jail cells for no other reason than to fucking make the white man wealthy, dog. And that shit fucking hurts, bro. And to see that shit so openly celebrated, you know, profitized, monetized, it's upsetting, dog. It's upsetting when you realize that these motherfuckers are just capitalizing off of our pain, dog. They've reduced us to brown bodies and they're capitalizing off of our pain. They're just taking away from the culture. And this is a little bit of that ancestral shit. Like, you can't just take, dog. You have to reciprocate.
when people get, you know, accused of appropriation, this is why we get upset about the appropriation, because you are just taking and you're not giving back. That's not the way the natural order works. Like, you have to give and take. It's a reciprocity. You know what I mean? And in this particular instance, I know for a fact that restaurant ain't giving back to the community, dog. And if they are, I'd be very surprised. You know what I'm saying? In fact, now I'm fucking interested in finding out what are you guys giving back? You know what I mean? Let's go find out. It's just weird, dog, because as I've already mentioned before, like, this is part of the pain of the decolonization process. I'm split in between two. And the two is that on the one hand, I want to go towards full clip into this native culture. And the other hand is like, damn, dog, but this Western culture is so comforting, anesthetizing. You know what I mean? And at the end of the day, it's like the two are just mutually incompatible, bro. And the fact of the matter is, the side that will win out ultimately always is the native side, because the Yautzin in the back just monitoring you and letting you know, like, I'm watching, dog, right? To let you know, like, bro, you're here for a reason. This is something that the Western world struggles with. We don't struggle with this, dog, as I already mentioned. You know what I mean? You're here to elevate your community, and you're here to be of service, to give those flowers. It's unfortunate that this knowledge was kept from us, stolen from us, realistically, right? And that we were reduced to this type of lifestyle, but, you know, it can be reclaimed. This is the whole reclamation process. And, you know, that's, I guess, the point of why I was so frustrated with when I saw this restaurant that just popped up in the hood, South Central El Paso, downtown El Paso, that doesn't seem to understand or appreciate that in any way, shape, or form. So yeah, dog, that's pretty much, like I said, where I've been, you know what I mean? And I'm looking forward to getting back into the podcasting game now that I, like I mentioned, am more firmly entrenched. Let's put this fucking microphone off of my grill. Give me 1 second, dog. All right, there we go. For those of you who are watching on the video, you probably saw it. It was like pressing up all against my face and shit, you know what I mean? For those of you that weren't watching, you have no idea what I'm talking about, so don't worry about it, right? Anyways, as I mentioned, now that I've, you know, that little 4 month trip that I was on basically is slowly starting to come to an end. I'm looking forward to picking up the responsibilities. I'm looking forward to carrying my burden. I'm looking forward to, I guess, fulfilling the role that it is that I've been entrusted with, that I feel it is that I've been entrusted with in order to help elevate my community. You know what I'm saying? And part of that entails that I start to become, once again, a friend of life, dog. I'm looking forward to becoming a friend of life. I'll talk more about that some other day when I actually know more about that, right? Or I should say when I'm completely able to convey what that means, right, faithfully. But for now, the basic gist is that it's a blessing, dog. Every day above ground is a blessing, and you have to treat it as such. You know what I mean? No matter how difficult it may be. And yeah, part of that entails for me doing the things that I got to do. For you, it could be doing the things that you got to do too, including, if you know, up to and including figuring out what the fuck it is that you got to do. But I did want to kind of get back to those roots from the early days of the podcast by sharing a little bit, not so much of a lecture, so much as a film analysis. Because in my class, I love to talk about the philosophy of film, dog. all my metaphors, right, are generally predicated off movies television, quote unquote, shows, right? Especially like Rick and Morty and shit. You know what I mean? And one of them, actually, one of the movies is Donnie Darko. So I'm actually looking forward to doing a whole breakdown on the Donnie Darko film. And I'm going to share a little bit with you today, right? For those of you who haven't seen Donnie Darko, by the way, I'm not going to mention this, but this is the philosophy that I use Donnie Darko for. One of the philosophies. And that is for the absolute idealism. I use it to try to explain Hegel's notion of spirit. For those of you who have seen Donnie Darko, the part where the little bubble comes out of his chest, I use that every time to illustrate the whole notion of Hegelian spirit. And I know it's weird because you might even be asking yourself, like, what the fuck? What does Donnie Darko have to do with philosophy? And the answer is actually quite a lot. And it's more than just the example that I just gave you right now of the Hegelian little bubble of spirit. Donnie Darko is a deep movie, bro. If you ask me personally, Donnie Darko is an actual real horror movie. Like a genuine horror movie, dog. Not a campy, corny, fucking cartoon character killer horror movie. You know what I mean? Where that fucking Jason or, you know, Michael Myers is tripping as they're chasing, the victim is tripping as they're being chased by Jason Voorhees or Michael Myers, or where Michael Myers and Jason Voorhees are these indomitable forces that are incapable of being destroyed and completely exist outside of the realm of possibility, right? Not that kind of horror movie, dog. I'm talking about an actual horror movie, Donnie Darko, that gets to the core of existential issues that haunt and terrify people, dog. This is a movie, in my humble opinion, that gets to the core of the issues of alienation, loneliness, dread, despair, anxiety, depression, meaninglessness, loss of purpose, feeling estranged from the world that you're living in, feeling disassociated, derealized from the world that we're living in. Deeply, deeply existential questions in the tradition of philosophy. And that, you know, these are real, real fucking horrifying problems that genuinely haunt people, those of us who, you know, immerse ourselves into these problems. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, dog, I guess, you know, I'll consider this a little bit as the precursor for the lecture video that I hope to create one day. So I guess we could just start off from the very beginning, the way I was planning on doing it anyways. And we'll talk about just how, I'll summarize it for those of you who haven't seen it. And then I'll talk about the philosophy inherent with it, the film analysis breakdown, right? So for those of you who haven't seen it, basically what happens is you have this character, Jake Gyllenhaal, who plays Donnie Darko, who is a little teenager that is lost essentially in life. And the reason he is lost is because he's just too fucking intelligent, dog. He's too smart, right? For his own good, basically. And he's able to see through the veneer. He's able to see through the facade. This is actually very deeply, deeply Nietzschean philosophy, dog. There is a great meme that was circulating a while ago. I know I've shared it before on the gram. OG_IceNice13 for those of you who haven't followed yet. But it's about two boys, right? The first is a boy with a look of fury, the scowl of fury. And it's not a scowl of anger, it's a scowl of fury. Why is he furious? Because despite his young age, he's learned to realize the difficulty inherent with life. And he does not see the difficulty as something that he allows to wear him down, but rather as an obstacle to be overcome, okay? And then it's the second little boy, and his is more like a hollow, empty smile. It's like soullessness, if you will. And where that comes from is the Western Christian world, Christianity specifically, to keep in touch with Nietzschean philosophy, has numbed him and has created a barrier, if you will, from the actual harshness of reality. So it's not a fucking, his smile is not a, it's not a smile of happiness. It's one of mediocrity. It's the mediocrity that I was talking about in the first half of this fucking podcast, dog. Right? Which isn't surprising because, as I've mentioned before, Nietzsche simply crossing the bridge over to Nahual philosophy. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, dog, that's Donnie Darko. The whole movie is predicated around people trying to get him to be that plastic, mediocre little boy with the smile of, you know, just empty hollownessness. Hollowness? Yes, there you go. Hollowness, right? But he's just revolting. He refuses to adhere to that standard, right? And a key part of that movie is the time travel component, which, again, you might be asking yourself, like, what the fuck does time travel have to do with philosophy? And the answer is pretty simple, dog. And that is, of course, everything, dog. This movie is rife with philosophical undertones. I mean, just the time travel alone brings up questions about the existence of God, the nature of free will, determinism. Is there meaning? Is there purpose in this life? And the answer for Donnie Darko is, yeah, dog, there is. Perhaps one of the most confusing parts, and this is what I'm really looking forward to clarifying when I do the video breakdown, is what the fuck is going on? Because the ending for, you know, is kind of confusing for a lot of people. But basically what's happening is homeboy's sacrificing himself, dog. He's sacrificing himself. And the reason he's doing so is to save his loved ones. So on top of being a horror film, it's actually also a love story. You know what I mean? Who are the loved ones he's saving? Well, more specifically, he's saving his girlfriend that gets, spoiler alert, this movie's been out for like 20 plus years, dog. His girlfriend, he meets this girl, right? And he like really likes her. But then she dies. She gets run over. And who does she get run over? By none other than Frank, the fucking rabbit that he's been seeing the entire time. You know what I mean? Which is like the culmination of the movie. It's already at the end. You know what I'm saying? But that's the moment where he understands what he has to do. What does he have to do? He has to travel back in time in order to avoid all of that from happening. How does he avoid all of that from happening? He sacrifices himself. It's the last temptation of Christ, dog. The part where, you know, in the very beginning of the movie where the jet airliner comes through, this is what they're working on throughout the whole movie. They're trying to explain that time travel is possible. You just need a portal to open that is opened up. Rather, the portal's open through the wormhole, right? But now you just need something that's going fast enough and a ship, essentially, that can take you within through this portal. And that, of course, is the airplane that crashes at the very beginning of the movie, the airplane that his mom is in and that she wouldn't have been in if he had just, you know, been a better kid, right? So he sacrifices himself, dog. He sacrifices himself. And because of that, he's he goes back in time. He travels back in time and he lays in bed as the jet airliner crashes down in his fucking room and kills him, essentially, right? So the movie starts, it ends where the movie began, essentially. To keep going a little bit more with the philosophy of this Donnie Darko, there's another one of the famous clips where he's having the discussion with his school teacher. This is when he's starting to figure out time travel. And he's having this great discussion with his teacher that is actually deeply echoed in the philosophical annals. And it is essentially the problem of free will. I'll delve deeper into it in the actual clip, a video that I make itself. But the basic gist of the argument between Donnie Darko and his teacher is he goes to a Christian school, first and foremost, okay? And Donnie Darko is speaking to a science teacher trying, you know, to make sense of this time travel, which, by the way, is made sense for him by the lady that's always walking back and forth through to the mailbox. I forget her, Lady Death or something like that. I forget her exact name. But she's the one that figured it out, and Donnie Darko kind of just stumbles upon her once again, right? So to echo a little bit of what I mentioned earlier. But the idea is he's having this conversation with his teacher, and it's basically the problem of free will in the sense that Donnie Darko figures out that if you can time travel, that means you can look into the future. And if you can look into the future, you could see what your destiny is. And then his teacher tries to correct him and say, well, you're contradicting yourself, because if you can see what your future is, then you have the ability to change it. If you can see what your destiny is, then you have the ability to change it to something else, meaning another destiny. And then Donnie Darko responds by saying, but not if you choose the path that God chose for you, right? And that's where his teacher's like, I can't have this conversation anymore, because if I do, I can get fired, right? So, more of the philosophical undertones inherent with this movie, dog. Here, the problem of free will, the idea that, you know, Christian people maintain that, you know, God does give free will. But when you look deeper into it, it's the illusion of free will. Why is it the illusion of free will? Because you have to travel along God's predetermined path in order to get to that destiny. And that's kind of what Donnie Darko's figuring out, and why the teacher wasn't able to have the conversation, because working at a Christian school, you can't undermine the foundation of that Christian school, which is that, you know, the God figure is, or at least a dogma inherent with this God figure, is fundamentally flawed. And that is that, you know, God has a plan for everybody, because if it does, then that means there is no free will, because you don't have a choice in what you do, just the illusion of the choice in what you do, right? So yeah, dog, that's just like a little bit of what I look forward to sharing when it comes to this video. But in the meantime, I guess some of the, just like some quick parting thoughts on Donnie Darko in general, and it's just how deeply influenced I was by this fucking movie. Like, I've always wondered how I didn't resonate more with the Cholo lifestyle, given the fact that I fucking grew up in it. And, well, there's a lot of answers. There's a lot of answers. And one of them is that I made a conscientious effort not to. You know what I mean? It still impacted me severely, greatly. You know what I mean? But I chose in many ways to not be a Cholo, dog. And I guess another reason is because, you know, I'm a boy. I'm a dude from the fucking mid-80s, dog. I was born in the mid-80s, right? So between fucking movies like Donnie Darko and The Lost Boys, fucking Freddy Krueger, The Crow, fucking all the hot goth chicks from, you know, that era right there. it's no surprise how I got to be the way that I personally am, right? I'm not trying to fucking bloviate and, you know, self-congratulate myself. I'm just saying that it was just funny watching this movie and going back and realizing that how deeply impacted I was by this movie. Just the very beginning, dog. The Under the Killing Moon by Echo and the Bunnymen. One of the greatest post-punk songs that has ever been penned, in my personal humble opinion. You know what I mean? And it's like, I didn't even know that song was in there until I went back and rewatched it. I was like, holy shit. This whole time I thought I was an Echo and the Bunnymen fan because I just found them organically and I thought they were dope, and I found this song and I thought it was amazing. But no, it's just in Donnie Darko. Like, it might have been Donnie Darko that introduced it to me when I was a teenager. You know what I mean? And which wouldn't be surprising, because I was like a snobby and pretentious teenager, and this movie is every bit snobby and pretentious. So I can definitely see how 17-year-old fucking edgelord emo me, you know, totally took that movie and just fucking ran with it and made it a whole personality structure and assumed that somehow I consider myself unique and special, but realistically I'm nothing more than a fucking Muppet running around pretending to be Donnie Darko. And then I guess really quickly, dog, one more thing before I finish up, one more little bit of philosophical analysis, not because, you know, I'm going to share all this in the video that I will eventually make, but because it is also something that I was thinking about during these last 4 months. And that is the concept of 2 weeks. I know I mentioned it before, but to stay in line with the Donnie Darko theme, we'll go with 20 days, dog. And again, for those of you who haven't seen it, I encourage you to watch it. But for him, like, the movie starts with a countdown, basically. And the countdown is from a rabbit who eventually he finds out his name's Frank when he's at the movie theater watching fucking Evil Dead of all movies. Again, like, here I am thinking I'm this special, unique person. But I did like Evil Dead before Donnie Darko. Like, at least I think I did, right? Or maybe I just really started to love it because of Donnie Darko. For those of you who've seen the movie Donnie Darko, he goes to the movies to watch Evil Dead, and it's at that movie where fucking Frank the rabbit reveals himself to Donnie Darko and tells him what to do, right? Anyways, the movie starts with Frank fucking haunting Donnie Darko, this alleged little schizophrenic child, and telling him that the world will end in 20 days, which technically it does, because as I've already mentioned, spoiler alert, Donnie Darko fucking dies. He kills himself. The Last Temptation of Christ, that's fucking up on the movie, on the marquee of the movie theater next to the Evil Dead, just in case they're throwing that out there randomly. But anyways, so the world technically does end for Donnie Darko in 20 days because he died. And that's, you know, the problem with solipsism. Are there really other people in this world, or is it just me? Because if it's just me, then when I die, that means the world ends. And that's exactly what happens, right? For people who died in Donnie Darko, the world came to an end. You know what I'm saying? But for me personally, I've always had the number 2 weeks in my mind. And 2 weeks, 20 days is literally the same concept. And that is that at any given moment in time, you will always be, at one point in time, you will be exactly 2 weeks away from the day you die. Or 20 days if you're Donnie Darko, right? So just some food for thought. And yeah, I guess this is about as good a time as any to wrap this bitch up. I was enjoying being back, and I'm looking forward to dropping more in the days to come. Until then, I hope you all have a great rest of your day, and I'll see you for the next one. Peace.